followed up with the NROC. Brian?
Good morning. Brian Hooker with the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, representing Mo Bornholt, who is the program manager. She sends her regrets that she was not able to be here today. On Friday, she aggravated a previous energy and actually broke her upper ankle area. So, anyway. just wanted to use this opportunity. Thank you for the opportunity to come update you. There's two tasks kind of before us today to just update on the process, the planning process that is ongoing, as well as solicit comments for an open comment period for the area of mutual interest planning area that is between the states of offshore Rhode Island and Massachusetts. This is an update since the last time we addressed the council in April with Assistant Secretary Ned Farquhar. And we'd definitely like to express our thanks to the council, the states, the regional office, and the Science Center and the Coast Guard as well for their participation throughout this planning process in the form of comments and the task force meetings and such. Primary presentation for today, as I mentioned, is kind of a quick overview of where we're going, the wind leasing process, the update on New England and the Mid-Atlantic, and a quick overview of the environmental studies program. Quick note that beginning on October 1st, we'll no longer be the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management Regulation and Enforcement. We'll just become the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. There's the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement is splitting apart from BOEMER. However, the Alternative Energy Program Office is remaining whole within the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. So quickly, there are four stages to our OCS, Outer Continental Shelf wind leasing process. There's the planning and analysis, leasing, site assessment, and commercial development. Stage one, where we are currently, is engaging the intergovernmental task forces, publishing different planning notices, such as the request for information and the call for information and nominations. It is a call for information nominations that we currently have open off of Rhode Island, Massachusetts. And we've already completed a request for interest off of Massachusetts. After that, there will be an announcement of area identification. And then we'll conduct our environmental compliance and statutory consultations. Continuing with stage one, the planning and analysis may be started by a developer submitting an unsolicited request to the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. In either case, whether it's an unsolicited request or if it's part of this identification of wind energy areas process, it's the same planning process that we'll do in either situation. Stage two is leasing. Once the wind energy leases may be issued through a competitive or non-competitive process, throughout the leasing stage, BOEMER will continue to engage with the task force's stakeholders and the public. And the notifications in there are the determination of no competitive interest, which has a comment period, the proposed and final sale notices, and then there's the process of actually issuing the leases, such as negotiating the lease and holding a lease auction if it's a competitive lease. Stage three would be site assessment after a developer has a lease. They would be required to collect site-specific information to be submitted ultimately with their construction and operations plan. This is when they go out into the field. They collect wind data as well as biological and sociological, geophysical, geotechnical information. And then we will conduct the environmental and technical reviews for that. We we do an environmental review for their actual, their site assessment activities, as well as then for their COP, which is on this slide, in stage four of the commercial development. As I mentioned, they submit the construction operations plan, which will describe all the overall site investigation results, and as well as their design, installation, and decommissioning activities that they would do. So that after the five-year site assessment plan, they would have 25 years of operation. They can, with the option to renew at the end of 25 years. All four of these stages that I just went through have an opportunity for a notice and comment. And we're, as we have right now, we're doing a notice of intent, a public comment on a notice of intent to prepare the CA. And as we did in the Mid-Atlantic, there will be a public comment period on the draft EA as well. And that will be for all all of our planning documents. So quickly update you on Maine. The last task force meeting was held in task force meetings were in September and November 2010. No planning currently underway. However, BOMER is working with the new governor's administration to reconstitute the task force, and that's where we are there. In New York, we held a task force meeting in November 2010. No planning notice has been issued to date, but as you may have seen in the press, New York Power Administration just submitted an unsolicited request for a commercial wind lease 13 nautical miles south of Long Island. Fortunately, I didn't have a chance to map that out for you at today's meeting. I think we just got it a week ago. So you'll be that information, once we do a review of that plan, we'll make that available on our website. Update in Massachusetts. We've held five task force meetings since November 2009. We published the request for interest in December 2010, received 9 expressions of interest in 10 areas, and about 250 comments on resources, competing uses, and other issues. As a result of that early process, BOMER removed blocks east of the 70-degree west longitude line as requested by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So here's, once again, the original Massachusetts request for interest area, and then this is the current Massachusetts request for information area. That will be moving toward a call for information later on in the year. And this is quickly, I know it's hard to read on this slide, but this is where there was competitive interests identified within the Massachusetts request for interest area. As I mentioned, we'll issue a call for notice and intent, a call notice and a notice of intent to prepare an EA in the near future. There will be a task force meeting next month, and there will be a 45-day comment period for both of those notices. And once that is concluded, we'll have public information meetings throughout the state of Massachusetts. Oops. There we go. Thanks. Update on Rhode Island. This is, as I mentioned, the one where we have an open comment period currently. We had last held a task force meeting in November 2009. The governors of Rhode Island, Massachusetts had signed an agreement regarding the area of mutual interest in July 2010, and there'll be a map of it up here shortly. And the current information, the current request for information is specifically on these blocks and not on the blocks that I just did in the off of Massachusetts in the previous slide. Quickly here, we just issued a call and a notice of intent on August 18th. There's a 45-day comment period ending on October 3rd. And just last week, we held public information meetings in Narragansett, New Bedford, and Martha's Vineyard. So here's the map, and I just received last week the coordinates for an area under consideration by the PDT and the Habitat Committee for the Cox's Ledge closure area. I put it up there just kind of for information purposes. I know we are, you know, both in a planning stage regarding these areas, but I thought council members might be interested in where these areas intersect. So I just kind of put that up there for your information. And I don't know if you can see it, but the Massachusetts planning area to the right of that is in dark red. It's a darker hued red. You can see the outline of the Massachusetts request for information area where that kind of intersects with the area of mutual interest. So the next steps are to complete an area identification. After considering the information that we received from the call and the notice of intent to prepare the EA, we'll formulate and analyze the reasonable alternatives to the proposed action, mitigations, exclusions, and such in the EA, and then we'll complete our statutory consultations. Regarding the environmental assessment, as I mentioned, we'll develop a scenario that will consist of the routine and non-routine activities as expected as a result of the lease issuance and the site assessment activities. We'll also include in that site characterization surveys such as the shallow hazard surveys, geological and geophysical surveys, archaeological and biological surveys, as well as what we call the site assessment activities, which actually would be the installation of a meteorological tower or a meteorological buoy to collect wind speed data at turbine hub height. It will also look at non-routine activities such as severe storms, special collisions and elisions, and possible spills. We also analyze socioeconomic conditions such as impact on archaeological resources, commercial and recreational fishing, more shore-based recreational resources, and as well as offshore recreational non-fishing activity, and land use and coastal infrastructure. As far as biological resources, that's kind of self-explanatory, I think. Alternatives that may be analyzed would be some geographic alternatives within that area of mutual interest, fishing conflict alternatives, timing, seasonal alternatives regarding, once again, this is just regarding the site assessment activities, and ship and vessel conflict alternatives with transit and that type of thing. There's a traffic separation area to the west of the area of mutual interest, so we'll analyze areas that, you know, don't conflict with, try not to conflict with vessel traffic, and a no-action alternative. We'll also analyze the cumulative impacts, past, present, and reasonably foreseeable future actions. This is primarily limited to activities that are already leased that we know about. For instance, in the area of mutual interest, we'll probably be looking at the transmission lines from Block Island Sound Project, which is in state waters, but also the Block Island Sound Project itself. But as far as federal construction activities, we won't look at federal construction activities because that's still not even under consideration at this point. If the EA finds that the site characterization and assessment activities will have significant impacts, then we'll undertake a preparation of an EIS. If the EA results in a FONSI, we may issue commercial wind leases to approve site assessment plans based on that finding. Comments, as I mentioned, are due by October 3rd. You can go to the regulations.gov website. You can also deliver them via mail, and I'll be soliciting comments today as well from you. So, I just wanted to update you on the Mid-Atlantic as well. I know there's a lot of fishing that occurs outside the geographic scope of classic New England. We just closed the comment period recently on August 11th on the environmental assessment for four states, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia. Once again, this is only for site assessment activities. We are targeting a completion in early October for that EA, anticipating them publishing calls for information for Maryland and Virginia this fall. Regarding our environmental studies program, I just wanted to point out we did just recently complete one of our studies on electromagnetic fields. I know that's been an issue of concern for the council. We are, based on that study, we are now funding a more of an in-situ study, actually looking at results of electromagnetic fields actually in the field. That will be based out on the West Coast currently. But they have a situation where they have a live line and a dead line, and they can actually do a good comparison on what the effects will be. We also are in procurement with a workshop, a series of workshops that will facilitate development of best management practices and mitigation measures. These workshops will be between fishermen and wind energy developers. Those are planned for 2012, and we appreciate the council staff's feedback on some early drafts on that. And as council may or may not know, that it's explicit in the statement of work that that will involve the council in that process. We have a complete list of our renewable energy studies available at off the BOMER website. And at that, I'll leave it for questions.
Brian, thank you very much for that update. We appreciate your time. Council members, do you have any questions? Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian, on the EA, the initial process is to conduct an EA, and I saw as part of the government BOEM looking at fishing activity. I didn't see fishing habitat. So the two issues that I'd be very interested in seeing for us to comment on the EA would be fishing activity, traditional fishing grounds, and also the impact on fishing habitat. And then I'm concerned about the fact that, and then you'll look at that EA and then determine whether you do an EIS or a find there's no significant impact to just go ahead with leases?
That's correct. But once again, that lease issuance is for site assessment activities only. It would, potentially the construction of a Met Tower, deployment of a buoy, and the survey activity. So I'll leave it at that.
One other follow-up. There was some lessee requirements on a slide, and one of the lessee requirements was to do a navigational risk assessment. How does that differ between the government responsibility with the EA and the lessee doing a navigation assessment? And that leads me to why not have the lessee do a fishing impact, habitat impact assessment as well, or something like that?
The navigational risk assessment, I believe, is kind of a there's kind of a more of a formal document that's involved. The U.S. Coast Guard is heavily involved in providing, I think, the overall context for that type of assessment. They're providing a lot of information on vessel traffic and areas to avoid and that type of thing. So I think that's my understanding of that particular document. But as far as what requirements for the developer, habitat is definitely high on the list of information they will be collecting. And actually, on that note, you reminded me, too, that we just recently had a presentation from Kevin Stokesbury with his some of his video work for the scallop survey. And this past year, he added several survey stations inshore that cover kind of the southern end of this area of mutual interest, as well as some of the mid-Atlantic wind energy areas that have been identified. So we're going to try to work with him, I think, to get that data as well.
Any other council comments? Sally.
Yeah, thanks for coming, Brian. Could we look at the map that shows the Massachusetts area with the expressions of interest on it? My question is, so that those expressions of interest and potential development were submitted when the area was twice as big as what it was? So there were expressions of interest that were to the east. So my question is, how are you going to incorporate, I'm assuming that companies that said they were interested in the area to the east are going to say, okay, well, that's off the table now. We're interested in this area. Is that going to be a part of the process, and when will that happen?
Yes, they can come in at the call for information stage and submit. There's several places where I think a developer has the opportunity to submit an interest in an area, and I think this isn't my strongest area, but there isn't even another opportunity after a call for information nominations and the RFI to express your interest. You can come in. I think there's one more planning document that they can still come in and say, "Oh, actually, we're actually interested in this area, too." I think it's a determination of that competitive leasing process. So, they will have an opportunity to come in on the next planning document.
Okay, so that'll obviously be something that'll be interesting for the council to take a look at and see how much of that area actually there is interest for development. On the Massachusetts-Rhode Island area of mutual interest, I saw that you had an area on Cox Ledge that the plan development team had suggested that the council consider for some kind of protective measures. So that's good that information was provided. And with regard to the AMI, I would suggest that the council should, I don't know what the plan is for the council to submit comments, but as Brian said, we have until October 3rd. And so I'd look to you, Mr. Chairman, on what your thoughts are on that. But there are many opportunities along the way for the council to comment, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't comment early and share the information, especially along the lines of what Paul was suggesting with essential fish habitat, to make sure that that's part of the mix here.
Just talking with Paul, he said that we had already commented on the Mass one, but we can follow up with comments on that and get them in.
So the comment period that's open now is for this area, not the larger Massachusetts area.
Other council comments? Go to the audience. Harriet?
Harriet Diedrichson from New Bedford, own a fishing vessel. I have a question. If people lease these areas and they have for 25 years to develop them, is that what I understand? In the meantime, okay. Excuse me. Go ahead.
I was just going to say they don't have 25 years to develop it. The lease would be for 25 years, but if they don't act on the lease, it can be revoked.
Okay, so they have the lease though for 25 years, if they act.
Right.
Okay, and if they act on windmills, and for some reason, which personally I can't see windmills in the ocean. Salt water is the most destructive thing, and be much easier on land. Drive up and repair them. It's going to be quite a project in the ocean. It's going to be expensive, and I feel it's going to be a problem for fishing. I think there's a lot more here. I've already sent a comment in behalf of myself. You had a deadline, you extended it, so on that first deadline. But if the windmills do not work, are the people who lease them, are they responsible for taking them away and cleaning the debris and cleaning the site again, or they've been signed up and they're contracted that they have to take care of anything like that? Okay. So now, for instance, if you come to oil or gas, those are the people then that would still hold that area, and they would be the ones that would be involved if oil or gas was then found there and there was going to be exploration of that, or how would that work?
First of all, really just quickly address the decommissioning for for the wind offshore wind facilities. We hold bonding that can be adjusted based on how much we think it would cost to decommission. So even even if a company was to go bankrupt, we have those that bonding to be able to pay for the removal of those facilities, and they are responsible for removing those facilities. But as far as oil and gas goes, that's kind of out of my range of expertise. It's in a different group.
Well, basically, what hold do these people who are going to come in with the windmills, what kind of attachment or do they have to that property then? Because I hear at the presentations, and I've been to a few, they now refer to the ocean as real estate. So what rights would they have going further?
They would only have the rights, the developer that holds the lease would only have the rights for what they what's in their construction and operations plan, and that is clearly for alternative energy development. Anything else would revolve an entirely different process. If they wanted to, do an aquaculture, do some other type of activity, that would it would be a whole other planning process. That would be some of that would be outside of our jurisdiction, but there wouldn't be any other rights commuted with that lease other than for what's in that construction and operations plan for alternative energy development.
Okay. And the other thing, a couple of other things, is the radar. When I hear the presentation from the Coast Guard, first they say, I believe they open up and they say, you have to follow, is it the call regs or something they say in their opening? Okay. And then fishermen ask questions like, will we need small boat fishermen particularly, but all fishermen, will we need to have someone in the pilot house? Are we going to need two people now if they're a one-man boat, for instance? I've been to the Vineyard and I've listened in New Bedford. And he basically says no, but when you look at the call reg, you have to be in control of your vessel at all times. And when you know what these windmills and this metal is going to do to the radars, you'll need to focus on it, I imagine, constantly and consistently to be sure that your vessel's safe. So I think there's a little, when I listen to the presentations, I find them a little misleading, and then I read a little further some of the things that the Coast Guard was saying, that it can be moderate, it can interfere moderately to whatever. I mean, if it interferes, it interferes, and if you don't have your specific position on the ocean right, you can have a problem. So I think that when it comes to fishing and radars, I think this is going to diminish a lot of the areas where the fishermen are fishing if they're near particular places. It's a concern. I see it's been a concern in the Mariners magazine. They've weighed in. They've asked, some people have had to did a sample windmill, was going to be right in the shipping lanes. I understand that they're very concerned. So I feel that in fishing, that this could really be a problem, and it is going to impact the fishing activity. But then also, I've heard presentations that when the fish set their eggs and when the scallops set their spat, that the tide and the wind, of course, I'm just a layman, I've listened, they did a much better job, directs where that spat and those eggs are going to settle. And the job of the windmills is to extract the wind from the air. So now if those patterns are redirected, it's hard to tell really where the spat and the eggs are going to go from patterns before, or what's really going to happen. Is it going to land places that are productive? Could it land maybe on the Canadian side of the line? All these things, how much research is going to be required to go into this by the proper experts before anything goes forward?
To that last point regarding circulation patterns that could be affected by a wind facility installation, that will definitely be something that we look at once we actually know what, once we receive a construction operations plan, once we actually know what is going to be where. The technology, as you know, rapidly changing. They're moving to larger and larger turbines, which would decrease the total amount of turbines that would be within a certain area. So it's hard to tell right now if
until we receive an actual application to determine what the impacts would be from a facility being there until we have an actual proposal for an installation.
But that would be sort of like the chicken and the egg. You might have less turbines, like someone has maybe not two engines but one, but the one engine might be of the same capacity and move the same air or whatever. So if you've already give people the right, how could it then be stopped because of these patterns and these things with fishing? I think that this group here really should be most concerned about what's going to happen to fishing. I mean, that's their concern here. And I have a concern, and I know a lot of other fishing people in my area and other areas are very concerned that this can be very detrimental to fishing. So I thank you.
Well, we definitely, you know, hear your concern. Sure. And just to reiterate, again, the process. So, you know, when they receive the lease, that's not the that doesn't convey them the right to then just go develop it. They have to submit a construction operations plan. And for that construction operations plan, before it's even approved, we have to do a full environmental impact statement. So that's where you'll see the results of some of these additional studies that we'll be doing, some of the modeling outputs that come as a result of that. Mm-hmm. So you will, before we ever approve of an actual installation, there will be a full EIS analyzing those impacts.
I hear you, but I'm still very skeptic and worried about the industry. Thank you.
Brian, thank you very much. We've got one more presentation, and we, again, appreciate your time and the explanation. Thank you. We're going to move on to NROC. John?
Good morning. 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 Good morning.